always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
And we're live. Welcome everybody here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider as well as lead Lakers content creator for Offside, joined on this fine post-Vegas hangover Tuesday. The weather is perfectly resembling that. It's like foggy and ugly and rainy and stuff, and it's how my insides feel. But Andy Kamenetsky of the of Locked On Lakers, of ESPN LA Radio, of honestly, let's see, ESPN LA Radio, Locked On Lakers. You have Lakers Talk on ESPN LA Radio.
Not currently hosting that, but I have over the course of my time covering the Lakers basically worked for all the outlets. So you're kind of not, you're, it, when in doubt, just throw one out, because I don't currently work for The Athletic, but I have covered the Lakers for The Athletic. I don't currently cover the Lakers for the LA Times, but I have done it before. I have written for Lakers Nation. I have covered the Lakers for ESPN.com. Like, when in doubt, throw something out. It's, you know, 50-50 shot. If nothing else, it was once accurate.
That reminds me of a story that Harrison told over the weekend when he and his wife and I were hanging out. And apparently it was like back at, in the day, Spectrum Sportsnet used to host those blogger nights. And it was for those of us who were just kind of like starting out in the industry, and they would like welcome us in and they would feed us, and we would get to spend some time with their talent and then just kind of see how they operate and all that good stuff. And part of that, those nights festivities was from time to time, or we would go in and watch like the first half or so with like the on-air talent. And one of the times that we were there, Harrison was seated next to Jamie Maggio.
She's so nice. She's such a good person.
So Harrison, I guess, asked her, she was like, you know, and again, we're all young, and he suffers from verbal diarrhea from time to time. And he apparently asked her, like, hey, didn't you do, like, I know who you, because she, I guess, like, introduced herself, and he was like, yeah, of course I know who you are. Didn't you do pregame for the Chargers back in the day? I grew up watching, my family's a bunch of Chargers fans. She's like, no, I didn't. And normally it's like, ah, my bad, I could have sworn. But he was like, are you sure? Are you sure you did?
No, I'm pretty sure. Pretty positive. You know what's funny? My mom, and we obviously will get into the show, my mom likes the Lakers a lot. Like, she really grew into a Laker fan, I think, in part just by keeping up with what I do and wanting to have something to talk about. Like, she also likes basketball, but she lives in St. Louis where I grew up, and they don't have a team. But she really only follows the Lakers kind of from a distance. Like, and, you know, there's more national TV games now, but there's only so much you can be familiar with in terms of the coverage. And I remember one time she was in LA visiting, and she really does watch the Lakers coverage when she was out here. And so people know her Laker fandom really began with Kobe and Shaq, like that era. And pre that, other than maybe like Jerry West, because she used to attend then St. Louis Hawks games and could see him play. Like, she, there's a lot of gaps in the middle. And she was talking with me, and she's like, you know, the Lakers pregame coverage, she's, and postgame, she's like, James Worthy, he's terrific. She's like, he's really funny and he breaks things down really well. And he's got a great personality. I'm like, yeah, James is awesome. He's a really cool guy. And she goes, yeah, where did they find him? She had no idea of his backstory. She just thought he was this incredible analyst.
You know, it's funny, like, James is such a good dude also that he would laugh really hard at that story.
I've told him that, and he thought it was funny. Last James Worthy thing. One time, my brother Brian, who I co-host Locked On with, he was in the media, Lakers media room at now crypto than Staples. And he said all of a sudden from behind, he felt these arms hugging him. And it was James Worthy, like just saying, hey. And Brian was like, I have never felt safer in my life than that point where James Worthy is hugging me. He's like, I felt perfectly enveloped by this 6'8" Lakers legend. And I just felt completely safe.
Yeah, James is the best. James is like, I could go on James Worthy stories all day. And we won't do that to you guys. Today on the show, we're going to be talking about Pelinka's plan. And, you know, Andy, you and I, as part of this Home and Home, we recorded part one of it, which I think is going to air, you said, tomorrow.
Yeah, it should be on Wednesday at some point.
Yeah. So, but like in that conversation, we were talking about, you know, how this is very much a Rob Pelinka, like, thought out roster. Mm-hmm. This, I think, very much speaks to his like basketball ideologies. And we can now know that, right? For a long time, we didn't necessarily know those things. So we can now kind of identify, okay, this is how he sees the sport. I don't necessarily always agree with how he sees the sport, but at least we like know that we got an answer, right? And so I kind of want to, you know, build off of that point to discuss whether we think this was a plan worth carrying out, and see where we kind of land on there. And then obviously over the course of the show, if you guys have any questions or comments, hit us with them and we'll answer as many of those towards the end as I can. A reminder, please hit that like button. Please hit that subscribe button. Turn on notifications for the show and for YouTube so you get the notifications for the show. If you guys are listening to it in the morning via podcast, please hit that subscribe button wherever it is that you get those podcasts, preferably on Odyssey. But as evidenced by the fact I don't even have the logo up, I truly do not care. Let's start though with like this notion of Pelinka's plan. Oh, shoot. The other thing. Today's show is brought to you in YouTube form by Prize Picks. Use that promo code HMA and get $50 worth of Prize Picks lineups when you sign up and use that code HMA. All right. Now, with all of that good stuff out of the way,
yes,
we will go ahead and discuss Pelinka's plan here. And the reason that I always kind of formulate it this way is because of conversations that I've had with Pete over the years and how he was always very adamant about, like, I'm not sure LeBron is really part of the plan here. And I'm not really sure that, like, you know, this and that and this and that. And it does seem as if, and it's been widely reported ever since, that Rob did approach Luka Doncic with a binder that outlined, you know, various scenarios that the Lakers would pursue using the cap space that they worked really hard to open up and all of that stuff. And they said goodbye to some very popular players in order to open up all of that cap space. And now they find themselves with a roster that you know, I think Rob sees the game through a very offensive lens. I think JJ Redick sees the game through a very offensive lens. And I think Luka Doncic, unsurprisingly, sees the game through a very offensive lens. So given that we have all of that overlap in terms of basketball vision, what do you think about that overall plan arriving here and this being the final product?
I think it's a good roster. I don't think it's necessarily a great roster, but we still have to see how it all plays out. We can maybe talk about this. I think the ceiling from last year's team may be lower, but the floor I think is higher. And I think the floor actually matters a lot. But to your earlier point, it just feels like there is a cohesive vision of a roster and how it's supposed to work together. It is obviously very offensively skewed, and there are, I think, a lot of reasonable questions about how they're going to defend. Like if you want to try to justify Walker Kessler's salary, it's he's going to have a lot on his plate. Like that guy is going to be put in the position where dude has to earn his money. So in that sense, it might by the end of it feel like
every
adequate
game
mayor
is going to be the Jimmy Butler meme. He's just,
yes, I mean, like by the end of this, he might actually feel underpaid, depending on how things how things shake out. But like, there's a lot of, I think, offensive cohesion and a lot of guys whose offensive roles are very clear And like, if you compare somebody like, say, Mamu to Rui, and Mamu's often been talked about as the Rui replacement, hopefully not as literally, just because Mamu's not as proven as Rui. And I also think Rui is more of a legitimate starting four option than Mamu is, even if you could argue both might be more ideal off the bench. But like, Mamu may not have any one offensive skill that is as elite as Rui's shooting, but Mamu can do more things offensively. Like, Rui is a more limited, if elite in his lane, offensive player. Like, he's really more of a finisher of plays. Like, whether you're talking about finishing from behind the arc, around the rim, you know, the pull-up.
He's middies. A nail. Like,
But Mamu is, you know, he's a good shooter. He's not as established a shooter as Rui, but he's a good shooter. And he is a far better passer and playmaker and wheel greaser and somebody that can, you know, keep defenses off balance more so than Rui can. And he's a better rebounder than Rui. Defense, probably something of a wash. I mean, Rui might actually be a bit better. Like, I think he's improved a lot during his time with the Lakers, and maybe that happens with Mamu. But the point being, Mamu, I think, can do more things for the way this team is skewed than Rui could. And I think there are a lot, you can say that about a lot of the new guys and sort of who their comp is. I think there is more either two-way-ish balance or more complete offensive direction with this team that kind of makes the roster make more sense, even if you can look at the flaws.
Yeah, I totally agree with that last point that it might not have. I mean, you literally said goodbye to LeBron James. So, like, by way of that, you're going, like, you're in terms of just raw offensive talent, I think the Lakers have less of it on this team than last year's team did. But there's a possibility that because the puzzle pieces might fit together a little bit better offensively, that they might actually be more overwhelming than last year's offense might be. And it'll be really kind of interesting to see how that plays out. One thing that it does appear that the Lakers have done this year is they have doubled and tripled and quadrupled down on offensive fit and being as good as they can possibly be on that side of the ball, while, I guess, for lack of a better term, foregoing defense to a certain extent, like
to some extent. Kessler, I mean, Walker Kessler, they're counting on Walker Kessler being like an all NBA level defensive presence, and if he is, you know, that is a big defensive upgrade as a singular player. And I think he in some ways qualifies as more balanced than I was talking about, just because he's obviously a defensive upgrade over DeAndre Ayton or Jackson Hayes. Like, I don't think it's even debatable. He may not have as many offensive like skills in his bag as Ayton. Like, Ayton is a pretty skilled offensive player, but Kessler's not unskilled offensively. Like, you know, he averages like 68% from the field for his career. He was like 70% before he got hurt last year. Like, he can do things offensively. But he's just more of a defense first guy. Like, so I feel like there's just more sort of overall balance with this team. And again, I think it just makes more clear sense what everybody's roles are.
Yeah. What I should have said is they, in terms of foregoing defense, they overlooked, I think, perimeter defense. They think that Walker's going to make up for all of the issues that they have on the perimeter. And we'll see. That's what they basically did with Anthony Davis, right? Was, you know, they were like, all right, we're going to load up on offense. And Anthony Davis, it is on you to make us not terrible on that side of the ball. And I think that with like Anthony Davis at his peak, you could do that, right? Yeah. Like that was fine. However, is Walker Kessler at peak Anthony Davis's level right now? Like, that's the gamble that they're making. And if he is, then great. If he isn't, then And but yeah, like even if he isn't, I do think this offense, like, you know, you have quicker decision makers. The one knock I would have on Rui Hachimura was that, like, the blender would start and then he would stop the blender. If he didn't have if he wasn't fully benefiting from the blender. One of the nice things that Luke Kennard brought to the table was that, like, mm-hmm. he did get that blender started and he was very good at continuing it. And I think that was something that the Lakers acknowledged, Rob and JJ acknowledged, was something that they really wanted to focus on this summer. Now, it didn't mean bringing back Luke Kennard, but it did mean, you know, Mamu is really good at making quick decisions. Walker Kessler is actually underrated in this regard. And Quentin Grimes is a much better catch and shoot threat than basically anybody the Lakers had on their team last year. So the thinking is Austin, Luka, you guys start the blender. Everybody else continue that blender, and we will put enough teams in tough situations over the course of the regular season that I think they'll be a really good regular season team. Where I have questions, though, is because of the perimeter defense, what this is going to look like in the postseason. Is that a concern of yours?
Yeah. I mean, the defense is a concern in general. You know, they are. It's funny, actually, for all of the defensive on paper, the defensive issues that the rosters have had the last couple of years and all of the offense that they were supposed to have on paper the last couple of years, I think the defense, JJ has arguably gotten more out of the parts that he's had than the offense. Like, the offense has never really clicked, I think, at the level that people expected. You know, you got Luka and LeBron and Austin, like, and I think in a lot of ways it was better theoretically than in actuality until really you got to like that 1 month in March where they were spectacular and then everyone got hurt. They're obviously counting on Quentin Grimes to be able to turn into a, if not like elite plus defender along the perimeter, certainly somewhere between solid and elite, or like sort of like elite light, you know, plus light, however you want to put it. Like, there's a lot that is on Grimes's plate for this, for what it's worth. Had Tony Jones, who covers the Sixers and the Jazz for The Athletic, and he thinks Quentin Grimes is really going to be able to thrive in this role. Like, particularly now, he's got his contract, everything's set. He can be whatever player you ask him to be. He believes a lot in Grimes defensively. I know they brought in Zaire Williams to try to help
Grimes
along
the court. One of the most polarizing defenders I think the Lakers have employed in a long time, because people either really, really believe in it, or other people are like, his flashes are really good, but his down, like when he isn't right, he's like just brutal. I'm really curious what he averages out at, like when we can watch him on a night by night basis.
Well, it's funny too, though, Anthony. And like, I need to see him like you on a more of a daily game in game out basis. But when you talk about defensive players in general, they can often be polarizing. And I think it's because, like, the defensive metrics that we have, I think, they're useful, but they're more murky than offensive ones that I think are just much more clean to understand. And offense, I think, is often more quantifiable sort of to the layman and to the eye test than defense. Like, the defense at the NBA level is super complicated. And I think is very difficult to kind of tangibly quantify. So I think that could be at least a reason that Grimes can be polarizing in terms of people agreeing or disagreeing on his defense. I just know there's a lot that's going to be asked of him as a defender. We'll see how he does there, but he's going to be a big piece of, I think, the Lakers at minimum becoming a league average defense. And if they're a league average defense combined with the offense that they're certainly built up to be, that can be a pretty good team.
I think so too. The league average defense, we'll kind of see where they wind up there. But one thing I am 100% confident in is the offense. The offense, I think, is going to be really effing good. And it's going to be so good in the regular. Like, it was crazy. I saw while I was in Vegas, their wins total still sat at like 45 and a half or so. And I was like, that is very low. I don't know if they're factoring in a potential injury or something like that, but that is way low for me, even before a potential Kuminga addition. Let's talk about Kuminga, because a part now of this plan hinges on not just landing Jonathan Kuminga, but him committing to the caliber and style of basketball that he has been pretty abrasive towards to this point in his career. Does that kind of take away, like, the fact that the Lakers have arrived at this point in the offseason without a starting power forward? Just like, does that kind of, what impact does that have on your takeaway of Pelinka's kind of broader plan?
I mean, it's certainly not ideal. You would want you would want a starting caliber four in your starting lineup. I don't think you have to be a basketball genius or, you know,
yeah,
like the next Jerry West to land on that one. You know, I approached this offseason feeling like there was no way they were going to get everything done that they wanted to in one offseason. Like the idea that Rob Pelinka could turn this into a, you know, inner circle contender in one offseason was just never realistic. I always thought they need to look like they are 60-ish percent of the way there and like a clear roadmap. And if nothing else, the roster is set up in a way that makes sense. I'm not wild at the prospect of Mamu starting at the four, just because of defensive limitations. I am not wild.
Other teams are.
I'm not wild at the prospect of like Laravia as the four, just because of some of the offensive limitations. I mean, he was a solid enough, at least in the first half, innings eater for a lot of the regular mm-hmm. season. But I think just after a while, he was playing above his station. So it'll be, but then again, I don't know. Jonathan Kuminga is more of a theoretical starting caliber three or four than an actual one. Like there are mm-hmm. times, like there's clearly something there. And like, I remember there were a couple Hawks playoff games that I was like, oh, I get why they're interested in like a few regular season games. There was
plenty of Warriors playoff games where I was like,
yes.
Oh, mm-hmm. all right.
Yeah. Yeah. There is something there. And I guess maybe if you want to look at this glass half full, if they complete a sign and trade for Kuminga, you know, while the devil's in the details, guarantees and whatever, it's a 3-year deal. So maybe
player option they give him.
I would like to think that if they give him the AAV that he wants, there's not a player option. Like there appears to be a lot of massaging and hand holding that is required for Kuminga, which in and of itself gives me some trepidation. But the glass half full version would be he's been paid, he's got a commitment, and at that point he can relax a bit and not worry as much about how his role is going to affect his next contract. And JJ is pretty good at getting buy-in. Like he's been pretty consistently good mm-hmm. at getting Agreed. Buy-in from his players. And if they bring in Kuminga, they're going to be counting on JJ to be a Kuminga whisperer. And they're going to be counting on like Luka and Austin, who are going to have elevated voices now as leaders, to be Kuminga whisperers. Like they have to go into this knowing it's, remember like the DeAndre Ayton Lion t-shirts? Like there's going to be a lot of like the equivalent of Lion t-shirts and Crunk juice and stuff like that for Jonathan Kuminga. Like I don't know what flavor Crunk juice he drinks, but they better have something like that on hand, some type of t-shirt, whatever.
Yeah, I wish I could just move past how uncomfortable I am by how much of this offseason hinges on Jonathan Kuminga. It's like, I'll ask you this, I'll ask it this way. What happens if they don't get him? You know, what happens if they, like, if this is the roster and they make the decision that they don't want to attach a pick swap to Jared Vanderbilt for the opportunity to pay $60 million to Jonathan Kuminga. And they basically go into it. I agree. Like I was talking to some people over Vegas in Vegas. And I actually heard that it would be Jake who starts, not Mamu. Or at least he would get the first crack at it. And then they would kind of see what it looks like in camp and stuff. I think that makes the most sense. He played like he was terrible in the playoffs, don't get me wrong, but I actually thought he was perfectly fine in the regular season. He's still only 22, 23 years old, so he's probably going to be better this year than he was last year. But if this is the roster, is it a good enough offseason to you?
it's good enough in terms of what I thought they could reasonably accomplish in one off season. Like, they may not have chosen every single player that I would have prioritized. Like, I know you and I talked on Locked On Lakers. Were it a possibility, I would have prioritized Kelly Oubre ahead of Colin Sexton. I understand why Sexton appealed to the Lakers. And I mean, beyond the fact that Sexton is very much Rob's type. He's like his only fan setting as far as basketball goes. But like, you know, he Sexton does represent, to be fair, like a tripling down on strengths. And I think they may be just looking to be a type of offense that never gives you a break over 48 minutes. And if that's if that's the logic, I understand Sexton over Oubre. If Oubre was actually an option for them, it's not what I would do, but I at least understand it. As far as what I thought they could realistically do this offseason, I think they did it pretty well. Now, these new guys all have to hit. Like, Rob needs to be right about Grimes. He needs to be right about Mamu. He needs to be right about Kessler. He needs to be right, frankly, about Austin at this new price point. If he is right, and you combine that with Cameron Carr as a draft pick, who thus far they seem to be very, very correct on him.
Yeah.
I think they're going to be fine in terms of trying to make trades and roster upgrades. They won't be as fine as if they had more draft picks and sweeteners and whatnot, but I think they will be okay if he's correct, because I think those will be contracts that you can move. He just has to be right.
Yeah, I think the Lakers have enough positional depth. I don't know if I would go so far as to call it talent, but positional depth to look at Atlanta, look at Kuminga in the face and be like, we aren't so desperate that you get 4 years, $80 million from us, you know? And you know, we'll see to what extent that they are, you know, they're capable of not blinking in those negotiations. Cause that's really what's going on here. Like, I've really not laughed at, cause I don't want to make it seem as if I'm laughing at the reporting. Like, the reporting that's coming out is legitimate. You know, when it's Jake Fisher saying that the Lakers aren't necessarily shopping Jared Vanderbilt, it's like, yeah, that is definitely what he's hearing. It's just that people are lying to him, you know, this is lying season, you know. And you know, when I hear that the Lakers, I heard over the weekend that they aren't like so desperate to get a Jonathan Kuminga, it's like, yeah, I could honestly see that. Like, that makes a lot of sense. However, they don't have a starting power forward or starting caliber power forward. So, like, to a certain extent, I'm going to push back a little bit against some of the stuff that even I am hearing there. And that's where, like, we are in lying season. Deadline week and the weeks leading up to trade deadline, lying season. Draft week and the week leading up to draft week, lying season. Right now was, you know, all summer, everybody is just straight lying to each other. And it's on us to kind of sort through some of that mess. Last thing before we get to a couple questions here to wrap things up. You have mentioned a couple times over, and I agree with you, that this was not a single year plan. I think this is a multi-year project to eventually arrive, hopefully after next deadline, or maybe not next deadline, or after next offseason, arrive at a place where you are that inner circle contender. I think that is pretty clear that that's how Rob had planned this out. And the best evidence of that is that both Mamu and Austin's contracts both dip next year at a time where I think the Lakers are hoping to use their non-taxpayer mid-level exception again. How high a standard are you setting for, like, is that a realistic 2-year plan? I think you went into this summer with clear eyes about what was realistic. Is becoming a inner circle contender with what the Lakers will have at their you know, what they can actually utilize, is that realistic to hope to be in that realm with San Antonio, OKC, New York, these inner circle contenders?
I don't know if Rob's gonna be able to pull it off, but it has to be realistic, because that's the box he put himself in. And like, when you spend as much time as he did over the last few seasons kind of kicking the can down the road, and for what it is worth, I feel like this is the first off season where Rob said big things are coming and he actually meant it. Like the past few off seasons, I feel like the organization had decided that LeBron and AD, we had gone as far as we can with this group, and agree or disagree in some respects, I don't even care what your answer is. That's clearly what they thought. I think really the larger problem was they were too afraid to move off it despite not believing in it anymore. And they just sort of let themselves sit in limbo without committing to anything. And in the past, when Rob talked about, you know, looking to the future, or, you know, this offseason we'll have this many picks, yada, 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 I think a lot of that was just stalling until, I don't know, LeBron decided to leave or Luka Doncic falls in your lap, like something like that. This offseason, I think Rob, and you can clearly see it by the moves that were made, was serious about doing things. And that's great, except now you also, because of the timeline with Luka and Luka being in his prime, you have to put together a top shelf competitive team within basically three transaction cycles. Like, you have to. That's the whole point of having Luka, you know, in his prime, like, you know, a no-brainer top five player in the league. Like, you have to make it work. Can he pull it off? We'll see. I do think, again, the bones of this roster is a good starting point. And that's why I'm satisfied with what they have done thus far. But there's still a lot of work to be done. And Rob has to prove that he's capable of doing it.
Yeah, I think. So going into this offseason, I actually had a higher bar. Shocking, I know. Than most people. And part of the reason that I had a higher bar was because of the caliber of players that the Lakers were letting walk for the sake of this plan, right? Like, if you're building a roster, a basketball team, and you don't have LeBron James as a part of your plan of that basketball team, your plan better be pretty fucking good. You know what I mean? Like, if you're... With LeBron playing at the caliber that he was still playing, you know, the last time we saw him wear a Laker uniform, it'd be one thing if he was clearly geriatric. It would be one thing if he just didn't have anything left in the tank. But he helped you win a playoff series, and against a team that you were underdogs against, right? Like, they went into that series against Houston, pretty heavy underdogs. Thanks, Vegas.
Although a lot of those lines were set before people knew that Durant wasn't going to play. I think if the lines people had known that KD would basically miss the whole series, at the very least, I don't think Houston would have been heavy favorites. I actually think the Lakers might have been favorites heading into this if people really knew Durant's not going, for all intents and purposes, he's not going to play.
I honestly thought they mispriced the series. I thought that the Lakers should have been favored outright. But regardless, they won that series. LeBron helped win you that series, did so without Luka Doncic. And for you to go into the next offseason and essentially not talk to him, right? Like, ghost him basically for the first couple of weeks. And you're doing that for the sake of
I think he was ghosting them too. I think it was pretty mutual ghosting. And they were tired of each other. Like, they were part of the reason that LeBron's not here is he didn't want to stay. Like, beyond what the Lakers didn't want, LeBron didn't want to stay.
But still, like, he clearly wasn't a part of their plans. However LeBron felt about, like, whether the Lakers were part of his plans, I think we now know that he wasn't part of theirs. Yep. So if he isn't part of your plans, and Marcus Smart isn't part of your plans, and Rui Hachimura isn't part of your plans, and Luke Kennard isn't part of your plans, then, like, your plan's got to be really, really good. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's the question I keep asking myself. Do I believe enough in this plan to have said goodbye to LeBron the way that the Lakers did? Where do you land on that one?
I feel like the relationship between LeBron and the Lakers had just run its course. Like, it had been a marriage of, as I put it, a marriage of inconvenience for the last 3 or 4 years. I think both sides have been hoping for something better than each other. Like, could you theoretically have made it work another year or so? I guess. But, like, I think both sides... There's a lot of focus on how LeBron felt unappreciated by the Lakers, and some of where he's coming from, I understand. Some of it, I don't think he's being reasonable. But I think also the Lakers felt unappreciated by LeBron. Like there were things that we did for you that never seemed to be enough either. Like namely drafting your son. And so it's clear the Bronny piece of this, I don't give a shit about the nepotism like at all.
Yeah.
Like J.R.
Smith. Fine too.
Well, yeah. The Knicks brought in J.R. Smith's brother to be on the team to keep J.R. Smith happy. And with all respect to two-time NBA champion and one-time Lakers NBA champion J.R. Smith, he ain't LeBron. So, like, if J.R. Smith can be made happy in this way, you can do that for LeBron and Bronny. But the piece of this, though, that I do think required appreciation from LeBron is any other year, they either would have traded that pick outright or drafted a stash guy because they needed to use that roster spot on an NBA player. Like if they wanted to be competitive. And like, I don't mean that as a slight against Bronny. I'm just saying they did not have, practically speaking, a roster space available for a project. They did that for LeBron. And like things like that, I think from their perspective need to count. And I don't say this to take the Lakers side over LeBron's or whatever. I think they've both had varying degrees of unreasonableness. I just feel like we had reached a place, like they never planned to be together for 8 years. Like they never planned on this going as long as it did. And I just feel like maybe you could have done more backward bending and whatever, but it just has felt to me like they were ready to be done with each other. And also there's a part of me that feels like with the reports that LeBron is doing a documentary about his final year or so in the league, you know, staying with the Lakers isn't the sexiest story if you're looking for story arcs and things like that. I'll just
say. I completely agree that both sides were absolutely ready to move on. And like I always kind of say, if this was 2K, I would have kept LeBron, but this isn't 2K, and you can't just turn off chemistry, you know. I also think a part of why LeBron was ready to move on from the Lakers is because of some of the stuff that we've talked about where like Rob would promise stuff and then like you would say, oh, well, you can't buy a house that isn't for sale. You know, like technically speaking, depending on who you talk to, Walker Kessler wasn't for sale going into this summer.
Yeah.
Right. But the Lakers basically said, just as any really, really rich person can say, what price is your house for sale at? Right. Like my house right now, not on the market, but if somebody shows up and says, hey, I'll offer you $3 million for your house, I'd be like, babe, we're moving, you know? And that's essentially what the Lakers did with Walker Kessler. It was like, yeah, he's not technically really for sale. The Utah Jazz, like, have you seen their center rotation right now?
Yeah.
It is an adventure. But the Lakers basically said, we will make your house for sale. And that is something that I think LeBron would have wanted the Lakers to do at the tail end of his time with Anthony Davis was like, you keep on telling us that the prices are unreasonable, but like, I'm still pretty good at basketball. Could we actually give it a real try at building a roster here? And I think enough of that, as well as some of the other stuff that we've talked about, Baxter Holmes had a really good, prescient article about some of that relationship. And yeah, by the time we arrived at the summer, both sides were kind of like, we'll talk to you when we talk to you.
Yeah. I mean, I think the last few years they had decided that LeBron and AD, we can't go any further. Again, agree or disagree. It's clearly what they had decided. There's certain ways that I understand them, but you know, the flip side is LeBron could have always left too. Like, you know, and he wasn't staying purely out of loyalty. He was staying because he wanted to be in LA and he liked the setup. And by the way, that's not a dig at LeBron. Like, it's fine. Like, not everything has to be perfect and about pure basketball reasons. Like, but just, I think everyone has to acknowledge what was going on. It was always super transactional on both sides. And eventually both sides ran out of shit to transact from each other. So we've moved on. I don't mean that to say they won't miss LeBron at all. I think there will be games where they definitely miss LeBron. This is just the longer the Lakers went with more reports of no communication between them and LeBron, the more obvious it always was he's leaving. Because once you enter free agency and you don't have a firm number with the Lakers, then LeBron's money is basically going to be the same with the Lakers as it is anywhere else. And if you remove the component of Lakers being able to pay him more, then he's clearly out the door. Like, clearly.
Yeah. Let's look through here and find a couple of questions. Kirk Hamilton asked a good one here. Without an immediate plan, the Ayton trade looks so bad. We could have had the best center roster in the league. Spilt milk, I guess. I mean, it's impossible to say, because I do think anytime you can get your hands on Washington Wizards draft capital, you do that. Same time, that is a steep downgrade to go from DeAndre Ayton as your primary backup to Kevon Looney as your backup.
And, well, I consider Mamu the primary backup.
Yeah, like he's like that kind of situational. Like he might play some with Walker. He might play some as a small ball five. He might play some with Kevon Looney. So like, but like, I do think what do you think about the DeAndre Ayton trade?
Well, to begin, I would need to know, you know, how does Ayton feel about being a backup, and what Ayton says right now might not be the way it always is throughout the season. Like we saw a lot with DeAndre, him saying the right things and at times accompanying those right things with actual actions, but then it would wax and wane. And he clearly sees himself as a starter in the league. And I think he is. I think he's, you know, at this point in his career, he's more of a low-end starter, like, but he's a starter.
Best center in the league,
yeah, I would say. He's clearly a starter. And I think with the Wizards, he will have more opportunities to start between AD maybe getting moved and, unfortunately, the injuries that have to be priced in with AD. I think he'll have more opportunities, but I think they were concerned about being able to keep AD motivated in that role. But to Kirk's point, immediate plan with those seconds, or I guess rerouting Jaden Hardy, something needs to be afoot relatively soon for that to make sense. Then I have to be like next week. They're not playing basketball till October, but something needs to come of that move that is tangible. Otherwise, if nothing else, it would have been worth waiting to see how Ayton reacts and then moving him.
Yeah, essentially, if they use either of those picks on players, I will be looking at that trade a little sideways. You know?
Yeah, that's fair.
Let's see. Laker Rob 2814. With all the shooting guards on our roster, what do you think of trading Austin for an elite defensive offensive small forward for draft assets to round out the team?
Unless they have an immediate plan to flip the draft assets, I don't think that's what you can do right now with Luka in his prime. That being said, would I be open to trading Austin for an elite defensive, 3-and-D wing? Absolutely. Because I think that would make more immediate sense in terms of A, what you need around Luka, but also I'm of the opinion, one of the big concerns that I have about this much money being allocated to Luka and Austin, it's that it's a lot of money allocated to very similar players. And I think the best roster constructions, your best and second best players, or your best and your highest and second highest paid players, they will offset certain things that the other guy doesn't do, whether in skill sets, position, whatever. Luka and Austin are very similar players, like in the best ways and in the ways that aren't as positive. It's not even so much a commentary on Austin. I think he's a really good player. I don't know if he's necessarily as good as the Lakers are counting on him to be, but he's a very good player. I just wonder if that's the best way to allocate those resources. So were that type of player made available for Austin? Yeah, I would definitely consider it.
Yeah, like I would, you know, put it slightly differently in that, like, normally your second highest paid player fills in some holes that your best player leaves. And I don't know what holes Austin fills in that Luka leaves, you know?
None to me.
One topic of conversation that I had frequently over the weekend was there's a lot of kind of speculation about Austin's future with the Lakers, depending on how the playoffs go next year. Like and it's like, it's fair speculation, I think, because they are bereft of first round picks that they can trade.
Excellent.
And He is, yeah, and he is like the only probably like movable high-end asset at that point. And you know, you just kind of adding two and two to get to four.
Yeah.
Andy, this is always fun. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, like, there's a lot on Austin, and he's going to be evaluated differently, scrutinized differently, and rightly. I mean, like, his station has been elevated in terms of both responsibility and price point.
Yeah, yeah. And like, look, I would love nothing better than to, like, sit down, have this same conversation a few months into the season and be like, wow, look at these guys go. But I do think that this is something that the Lakers and the league are kind of bracing for, is if the Lakers don't, like, because again, the bar when you have Luka Doncic in his prime on your roster is championship contention. Yeah. And that's the level that everybody is going to be held to from here on out. And, you know, in order to get there, you're going to have to make some tough choices. And I think that the tough choice that the Lakers and people around the league are kind of bracing for is, what's Austin's future in all this?
I think it is a logical and fair question to ask. Hopefully Austin plays well enough that it becomes the type of good, difficult decision. And you're in a place where maybe you can have your cake and eat it too. Either it's working well enough with Austin that you don't have to do anything, or you have to make a change that isn't necessarily condemnation of Austin. It's just, we need certain skill sets and Austin's playing well enough that you can move him. Again, if he plays well, a lot will, I think, offer the chance to work itself out.
Yeah. And look, worst comes to worst, the Lakers had a better offseason than the Boston Celtics. So, like, that's, you know, it's got to be worth something.
Playoff P, baby.
Oh man, I would love to at some point have a conversation about, like, the reactions to, like, how mass media would have handled the Lakers trading Jaylen Brown compared to how everybody handled the Celtics trading Jaylen Brown was something else.
It was funny too, like Paul George, who, you know, all jokes aside, easy target. He's obviously a very good player and he's had a very good career.
Yeah.
He's been the flashpoint of a lot of really big stuff in the NBA. Like, remember, the Lakers were so sure they were going to get Paul George like seven years ago. They didn't trade Brandon Ingram for him because they're like, why bother? He's going to be here next offseason and we can keep Brandon Ingram. And there was the same offseason that they got LeBron, and instead he stayed in OKC because Russell Westbrook threw a hell of a party.
He's like NBA.
He's been traded for a lot of really good players. Like,
yeah. Like, he, like, thinking of Paul George's NBA Forrest Gump is a fun way to kind of go through this, right? Where he's like, I'm at 13 presidents, like whatever it is. It's like,
yeah. Like, Paul George could kind of be his own 30 for 30.
And then in a playoff game, you could go 0 for 30. Ooh. Andy, this is always really, really fun. I enjoy doing these home and homes. Thank you very much for putting this together. And anything else that you want to plug before we get you out here?
No, just a lot of guests coming up on Locked On Lakers. Tony Jones was recently on doing a scouting report of Kessler and Grimes and Sexton, because he's covered both with the Sixers and the Jazz. Got an upcoming show. I've made a declaration. It will drop Wednesday, 2 p.m. Pacific time. So that's when my show with Anthony's coming up. Got Mike Trudell coming up. Jovan's coming up. I'm pretty sure I'm going to have a scouting report of Zaire Williams coming up sometime next week. So, like you, Anthony, keeping the content machine rolling.
Almost there. No, we're not almost there. We are just at the doorstep of the worst stretch of the sports calendar.
Yes.
So, damn, welcome to mailbag season.
Well, that's when you and I are going to be doing a lot of shows together, just because we're killing desperately so much time.
Exactly.
No, all right, everybody. Home.
Are you okay? We're not okay. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Please hit that like button. Please hit that subscribe button. Turn on notifications both for the show and for YouTube. Please subscribe to the podcast wherever you get it. And again, that promo code is HMA on Prize Picks. Use that promo code, set a $5 lineup of your own, get $50 worth of free lineups. There will be a link in the description of this show that you could use to get the Prize Picks as well. And until the next time you guys hear from us, I'm Anthony Irwin. That was Andy Kamenetsky. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. We'll talk to you.